Hi everybody, this is Bina 007 and you're listening to Vassals of Kingsgrave, an offshoot of an offshoot of a podcast of Ice and Fire. Today we're gathered to talk about the new series Star Trek Discovery Season 1. We will spoil all the events of that series and maybe some other Star Trek related content. Today I'm joined in no particular order by Dana.
Tain Dana on the forums.
By Mary.
Hello, it's Mary Nymeria on the forums.
And by David.
Hi, David. David HHH on the forums.
And we may get some other special guests later on. So let's begin with our spoonfuls of Saru soup rating out of 5. I'm going to go ahead and give this a 4. How about you, David?
The season was so up and down, so it's hard to do. I'll probably give it a 4 because, like, the first half, I'd probably give a 3. The last half, maybe except for the finale, I'd give a 5. So I'll give it a 4 all around.
Lovely. Dana?
3 of evil Georgiou eating the soup and 1 of Michael eating the soup. So it's a 4, but, you know, 4-ish, yeah.
Okay. And Mary?
I will agree on 4 with all of you. 4 is good. Wow. I had some issues with it, but I enjoyed it.
Gosh, unanimous joy. You'll all be pleased to know that I managed to interview SJ Lee earlier in the week, and he is a longtime Trek fan who really has issues. I mean, he gave it 2 out of 5, up from 1. So we will have a counter. So for those of you listening who really had issues with it, he's very articulate about why he didn't like it. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast in the after show, and I'll attach that interview.
Oh, cool.
So what is your backstory with Trek? Because it seems to me that of my friends, a lot of the people who like it more tend to be, like me, new to it. And the people who were really invested in the universe had lots of issues they couldn't get over. So, Dana, how about you first? Like, had you seen much of this beforehand?
My father is a very long-term Trek fan, so he's a Picard guy. I've seen a few episodes with him, but not an entire series altogether. It goes Picard, hideout, lady, female officer for him. But when it comes to sci-fi series, I grew up with Farscape, so I'm partial to this kind of thing. But this was my first sit down and actually watch every episode Star Trek.
Yeah, experience. It was the same for me. I'd never seen I don't think I'd ever seen an episode all the way through. But I had seen some of the films, so I knew kind of vaguely what was going on. How about you, David? You're more of a Trek fan, right?
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. Most long-term fans are classic Trek fans, i.e. Kirk, Spock, etc. I'm not. I in the old days, like when it was on, well, I mean, it wasn't on. It was on when I was a kid. I mean, you know, like barely born, actually. But, you know, it was on in syndication over and over. And most sci-fi fans were huge fans of it. I was never a huge fan of classic Trek. I liked the ideas. I wasn't all that into the characters. Part of it, I think, is because I'm not into Kirk very much. And he's very macho, aggressive, which I'm not into at all. But then when Next Gen came along, I loved it. I mean, Picard is, like, I think the perfect captain, and it was really good, and I was a huge fan, and I watched every episode of them again and again and again. And my favorite Trek is actually Deep Space Nine, which was the next spinoff.
Yeah,
and
same I think as SJ Lee. He also loves Next Gen and then Deep Space Nine, so.
Right. Well, Deep Space Nine is actually my all-time favorite because I think it was one of the first shows in all of television, actually, although there was another show at the same time on, but that really did what we now consider serial storytelling, where, you know, traditionally up until then, almost all drama on TV was episodic. Like, you have, you know, in Star Trek, you'd go off to, like, the planet and you'd save the day and then you'd come back, and we would call that the reset button, because you could hit the reset button, no one's changed by it, no one grows as a character really all that much, and you can watch them in any order. If you skip 5 episodes, you can watch the next one and know exactly what's going on because it's the same people doing the same kind of thing. And Deep Space Nine, I mean, you had some of on Next Gen, you had some serial storytelling where you had, like, some overarching arcs for the characters, but on Deep Space Nine, it really became, like, more of a story. You know, you had a war, you had things, you know, things going on, kind of like you now have. And now all television does that, right? I mean, you know, you see that on almost all sci-fi, on almost all dramas on TV, and I love that, and that's why Deep Space Nine is my favorite, but I've seen all of them since then. You know, I even watched Voyager, which a lot of people hated, and Enterprise started off weak but got a lot better towards the end.
And what's interesting about DS9 is that Ronald D. Moore was one of the main writers on that, and then he went on to do Battlestar Galactica, which I love, and that is very political sci-fi and, like, lots of big philosophical questions. And I felt, you know, I don't think Discovery ever touched the depth of that, but there were times when there were interesting things posited about, you know, I think in the Ash Fox storyline about the nature of what identity is, and which we can get into for sure. So you come, so that's interesting. So you're the fan who actually still like this as a new one. Do you think in general you just watch? Are you able with all your universes to sort of watch things with a very open mind? Like, did you find that going from books to show on?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And involve that. Yeah. Definitely. You know, Game of Thrones, I watch them each for what they are and just enjoy them for what they are. And I would say, you know, and start, I think, you know, there are a lot of long-term fans of Trek that couldn't get past certain things on this. I just watched it for what it was. Maybe part of it's because I'm not as huge a like Kirk Spock Trek classic fan. I don't know. But I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was. But
that's
we'll
a great,
talk
that's
later
a
about
nice
it,
thing
but.
To have, though, I think. It's mm-hmm. almost like a talent, I think, to be able to divorce things in your mind. How about you, Mary?
I had never seen anything Star Trek before, or maybe like one movie like 5 years ago, but I have no idea what happened in that. but I did watch like all of Stargate, all of Battlestar Galactica, and more recently other sci-fi shows. So I am into sci-fi shows, just I never went into Star Trek, I guess, because by the time I started being interested in that kind of thing, there was already too many series, and like, where do I start?
Yeah, that was kind of my thing. Like, I think that, as I was saying this to SJ Lee, that as much as like old school fans might hate Discovery, we were talking about he would have preferred it to start at the end of the current canon and just build from there with new characters. And I said to him, but there's something about starting before the current canon that enables people like me to have a new entry point rather than having to think, oh my God, I now need to go back and watch endless series to get up to date.
Right.
So I think this was a very kind of a kind way of getting people like me into it.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I think one of the problems you're going to have with classic fans is that, you know, as a prequel, you know, things haven't happened yet. So we're like, well, wait, why are we seeing this? Why? And especially when it comes to like special effects, everything, of course, looks better because we have more money now, you know, and everyone's like, wait, but how can that be Klingons if this and if that? And I think you have to kind of throw that out. I mean, I think some people get too bogged down in canon and all that stuff, but it doesn't help. And I think one of the things they were trying to do on this show was to kind of trick old school fans by saying, you know, by having, and we'll get more into it with the characters and all that, but it really at the beginning didn't feel like Star Trek in the sense that, you know, Star Trek is a very positive, happy message of, you know, a future where we've gotten past discrimination and bigotry and money and capitalism and all the ills of the world we've now made better, and it's now the perfect future. And this was darker. I mean, we had a captain who was not very Starfleet. He didn't push those ideals, and we later found out why, but I think that turned off a lot of the old school fans and it didn't feel like it.
Oh, I agree. Whereas, I mean, I definitely had people say to me, it's kind of like not my Stannis, it's not my Star Trek.
Exactly.
And they were just like, that's it.
You know? Right, and they couldn't get past it. Whereas, ironically, that was the entire story point they were going for, was it's not. And it ended, if anything, I thought, you know, we'll get more into the finale, but I thought it was too much of a like, no, see, Starfleet is the perfect way. We solved the day and everyone's happy. And that actually almost bothered me. As opposed to the opposite, whereas it probably brought a lot of the classic fans back in and be like, oh, see, they were going the right direction all along. You know, they kept saying in all the interviews, stay with us, trust us, we're going to get there. And no one had faith at that point because they were all so pissed off. But I'm not as invested in that. So I just enjoyed it for what it was. And if anything, I kind of wish they'd stayed a little darker at the end. But,
I agree with you, actually. We'll get into it. So were any of you watching The Orville at the same time? Because this is interesting for me because of my love of my life, who I never bothered watching Trek before. I now ended up watching both Discovery and The Orville, which is a pastiche of something I'd never watched in the first place. Mm-hmm. But I actually really enjoyed them both, even though they're doing something different. Yeah. And I do know some like OG Trek fans who really like The Orville, because as much as it's kind of lovingly mocking that original conception, it does have those values. It's very shiny. Things are done for the best. It does do some kind of cool sci-fi conceptual explorations. Mm-hmm. And it's possible to get your kind of sci-fi fix that way too. Is anyone else watching it or enjoying it or not?
I just Googled it like 10 minutes ago when I saw it on the show notes, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah. Well, it's a Seth MacFarlane spoof comedy. So it's basically original Star Trek, but with dick jokes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it basically was Fox saying to Seth MacFarlane, what can we do to keep you? Because we've made so much money off of you between Family Guy and all your other shows. So he said, I want to do Star Trek. And they didn't have the rights to it. So they basically just did Star Trek without calling it Star Trek and made it funny because it's Seth MacFarlane.
But they do have lots of people, according to Philip, that also worked on the old Star Trek. So like the music sounds the same and like a lot of the design is kind of, it's eerily reminiscent, no?
Oh, I mean, it's deliberate. I mean, I don't even think they pretend. They don't even bother not even trying to be. I'm weird about it in that I think a lot of the classic Trek fans love the Orville, not even so much that it's a good show, but in protest of Discovery. You know, I had a lot of people posting on Facebook like, this is the real Star Trek. Watch this instead. Like, very, very angry and upset about it. Like, not so much that they really liked Orville, but they liked what Orville was trying to do.
Sad. I mean, watch it because you like it, not because you're trying to make a point.
Exactly. And I'm the opposite with it in that I tried to watch it hoping for it to be exactly what it was supposed to be. Funny but smart Star Trek. And I felt like it didn't succeed at either. Like, I have only watched about a third of the season because I can't bring myself to keep watching it. Because I kept watching it. I mean, does it get better? I hope, because I watched like the first six episodes.
And I loved it out the bat. So I'm not the person to ask if it gets better.
Yeah, right at the beginning, I felt like, okay, this is trying to be Star Trek, but it's not well written. And it's trying to be funny, but it's not funny. So like, I just kept watching it.
But do you like other Seth MacFarlane humor, though?
I normally do. That's the funny thing is, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Family Guy, but what I have seen, I've really liked. And I felt like the humor was really forced.
Dana, how about you? Are you watching The Orville?
I want to watch it, but I can't get it legally over here yet. For a while, I think it was on Stan, but it disappeared by the time I wanted to watch it. So I think they pissed
off Fox.
Well,
let us know when you do. It'll be interesting to know your take.
Yeah, because I've heard it described as like a love letter to Star Trek, which I like the idea of.
Definitely.
Oh, definitely. You can see MacFarlane love. And,
I mean, I like Seth MacFarlane when he's not doing Family Guy. I think I would actually pay to see him in concert, him pretending to be, you know, Dean Martin. So
perfect.
He is a talented guy, so I look forward to watching it.
Cool. Okay. Well, with that, let's get back on track and talk in depth about Discovery. So the way we're going to do this, guys, is we're going to talk about the production side of it, the writing, characters, themes, and then maybe get into a little bit what we're expecting from season two. So into the production of it, did you guys like, you know, just the way it looks, the opening credits, music design, the costumes, the ships, the vis effects? I mean, obviously I had no history with it, but I really like the opening credits because it feels like, you know, these pen and ink architectural drawings of sort of, if the whole theme is how you created the world in which you get Enterprise, I felt this was really lovely, sort of like a deconstruction. And I love the costumes. I love the fact that the girls aren't in miniskirts and I think the ships look cool. So I'm all about it, but you guys are proper Trek fans, so how did you find it?
One funny thing with me is I've really barely seen any Star Trek, but I do know the theme song, and so it still felt kind of nostalgic, even though I have nothing to be nostalgic about because I haven't seen anything else.
Because it's in the culture, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like popular culture, and I'm like, ooh, I know this music. So that was interesting. I thought the visual effects of the jumps were awesome. This was a satisfying part of the show, the costumes, the music, the opening credits. It was all very neat. I loved it.
I think it was very well done, you know, production-wise. The opening credits were really cool because if you don't know, basically it starts with like a little musical hint from the original theme. Then it goes into completely different, like all that violin, all that stuff in the middle is completely new and fresh. And I thought built that like feeling of like hopefulness almost in it with the, you know, sweeping and all that. And then it ends with a real like solid from the original opening credits or closing actually. But so they went for that nostalgic, but only at the beginning and the end. And then in the middle, they said, okay, we're going to do something new with this, which is exactly what the show is, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I liked it. Absolutely. You know, the opening credits, I think, like summed up the series in a lot of ways.
For sure. And how did you like the Terran costumes and the way the mirror universes look?
Right. That was cool.
I love like the first time you see high heels is in the Terran universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just thought it was fantastic. I loved everything from their shoulder pads that were just, oh, and Tilly when she was in it.
Tilly looked
fantastic.
Oh, Tilly.
Yeah, but even down to the badges and everything like that.
The little details.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes you appreciate the little details in the regular universe that they put in to make it the Terran universe so different and extravagant in little ways.
It was kind of like the designers were allowed to just really let it rip, go full cam, which I really liked. Sorry.
I just thought it was maybe a bit too much. Like, it almost threw me off. Just because, like, it was really, this is a different universe. You're going to notice that. There's no way you can be, I mean, except for the obvious one where we were mistaken all along. There's no way we're going to see that these are an...
Right. To be fair, I mean, you probably don't have as much of a perspective here in that the mirror universe has been a really recurring theme on all the Star Trek shows, except for Next Gen. I mean, it started off as an episode or two of the original show, but like Deep Space Nine brought it big time in. There were almost an episode every season, except for the first year or two. They first did it and it was so popular that they brought it back every year for at least one more either single or two-part story. And then they also brought it back. They managed to bring it back in Enterprise as well, and I'm trying to think. I think there was even a Voyager one episode.
But this is
the
thing that really surprises me, right? Like, so for people like me, the mirror universe was a total shock because it's sort of like, I didn't know this was a thing that happens every year. But what amazes me is that when Lorca was being so kind of anti-Trek and being all roguish, why didn't the old school fans realize this was probably the setup for a plot twist? Given that they have to know this, right? It just showed a tremendous lack of faith with the new series. Like, they weren't willing to give it a chance and see where it went to.
Right.
Because I was shocked.
Yeah, I even as an old school fan, I was shocked they went that far. But I think we're going to talk more about that later, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. As a fan, were you waiting for that glimpse of the Enterprise? Were you excited when it happened? And what did you think of it, the design?
I mean, the design was pretty much already done, so they kept it like the classic. I mean, I knew at some point we were going to have to see the Enterprise, and I figured it would be one of the season finale moments, whether it be a mid-season or an end. So that didn't surprise me even in the slightest. Like, if they hadn't done it, I would have been surprised.
Okay, cool. I mean, I have to say, like, not as a massive fan, even I was like, oh my god, it's going to be Enterprise. It was exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean,
so it was fan servicey, but like, not all fan service is bad.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You can't not. You have to. I mean, it'll be interesting to see later. We'll talk about, what actors they get to play roles. But
Okay, so let's get into, before we get on screen, let's get into the writing. How do you guys feel about the plot twist, the mid-season cliffhanger pacing? I mean, you know, how we get into the finale and the way the Klingon War just wraps up so quickly, the 13 versus 15 eps. If Fuller had stayed showrunner, would the writing have been different, as Dana said? I don't know, Dana, do you want to get into that first? That's a pretty fundamental one.
Yeah,
well, when they announced Star Trek Discovery, Brian Fuller was showrunner, and they were really, really pushing it, and then he very quietly left before, I think, even the first trailer drops. I think some of the writers that he brought on originally continued, but he was really unhappy with CBS. Is that the channel that it's on?
Yeah.
And they seem to have pushed him out. He wanted a very different series. He wanted to do an anthology series and, like, every season, a different time period. And because he moved on to American Gods, I think he is playing very coy, one to be respectful, also because, well, now he's left American Gods. So,
right.
Yeah.
Is there another show he was going to do that he ended up being off again too? So,
I don't know. I just kind of keep picturing Lorca as maybe being Lee Pace and getting really excited again, but realizing that probably wouldn't have happened because of Halt and Catch Fire.
Do we know that Lorca was always going to be just a one series character?
The actor has said that he knew. So in interviews, I've watched a lot of. They have I don't know if you guys get that over there, but they have a show called After Trek.
We get that because it's on Netflix here, so we get that too. But I have never watched it, in fairness. So
yeah. So, yeah, and I didn't at first because I didn't care enough. But then, like, once the show started getting really good, I started watching it.
And then was the show always meant to be 15 episodes? Because there's a lot of people online, because now this is how geeky my life has become. Thank you, Philip. I actually go to like Star Trek boards. He's sitting here listening to this and is making faces. And there's a lot of like apparently kind of arguments about whether it was originally meant to be 13 eps, because actually the end of that 13th episode does kind of feel like an end. And then we get this kind of quite rapid wrap up of the war, which almost could have been the start of a season two. But was it always meant to be 15 or?
Yes. No, 13. It was 13. They gave it a full, what we call a full season. They later, once they started going with it and they CBS realized that this is going to be our money, they gave it a couple more episodes, which I don't know if that was the smartest idea. But
because to me, that really affected the pacing.
Yeah.
Which made it feel uneven. Not that I didn't like the ending, but it just felt a bit noticeable.
Yeah.
And how have the ratings been in the US? Because obviously with Netflix, we'll never know over here.
We won't know, actually, same thing, because it's not on TV here in America. They did something weird in which the first episode was on CBS, but CBS is starting their own like Netflix kind of competition, which it seems like I think is going to be the wave of the future with TV. Because, I mean, if you think about it, when Netflix started and everyone was like selling them their shows, they weren't really competition because they didn't make their own stuff. It was like, well, hey, we can make more money if you show our show. But now with Netflix making more TV than just about anyone right now, they're direct competition. So you're seeing like Disney, CBS, all these companies going, well, why should we be making shows just for them? You know, let's make our own. So you're going to start seeing like a lot more of those. So CBS started their own thing called CBS Online, which is the only way you can legally see the show in America is to be a subscriber of CBS Online.
Okay, so we actually don't know whether this has been successful.
Right.
Star Trek forums though? Like, do we get a feel for whether it's been buzzy or?
Well, what we do know is that they've said that they massively have improved their subscriber base. So it has brought tons of new subscribers, but they have not quantified that. So yes, it's been successful, and they did. I mean, before, like, I think only a couple of episodes in, they already announced that there was a second season. So presumably that means it was successful, but we can't quantify it.
Okay. So how do you guys feel about the 13 versus 15 and the pacing? Were any of you in favor of, I don't know how you want to tackle this, but maybe do the plot twist first and then how it resolved?
I guess season wise, I mean, it was such an uneven season because it started off really weak and then it started getting better and better. And then by the mid season, it was really getting good.
It was amazing. It like back, 10, 11, 12 were just superb.
Then it came back with just shock after shock. And then we have this big dramatic like fight for the mirror universe. And then we have a nothing episode. And then we have a finale that's like completely different tonally from everything else and a little preachy. And like, I feel like the 13th episode would have been the perfect finale for the season because it was so exciting and dramatic and all that. And then we kind of get this weird little tagged on ending where we end a war in one episode.
How about you, Mary? Feelings to the ending? Pacing?
Same, actually. The whole end of the war was a bit like, if I felt like we were missing out on a lot of possibilities and action and, I mean, stuff happening to actually end the war. And it's all too easy and all too neat, but I did enjoy the idea that going back to Starfleet principles.
It just felt like they needed to reset quickly for season two, so they were almost going to sacrifice that final episode to just get the characters in the right place. But it was absurd to me, like, okay, suddenly Starfleet's a beacon of hope, but literally two episodes ago they were willing to effectively nuke a planet to win a war.
That same episode they were willing to do it.
It went to great extremes to make this point, like that was a bit too much, I guess, but otherwise I mean you guys saw it there was a break, right? It was really two parts the season,
and we saw it week by week as well, so we genuinely did were in anticipation of the next episode.
I wasn't, because I binge watched it, so probably I don't have the same opinion about this as you guys, but it did feel kind of uneven, some episodes really different than the others, which was kind of weird.
And how do you feel? Actually, Dana, do you want to say anything about that? Or
the second half of the series, including episode 13, I thought was like really nice and snappy. And the first half of the series, the only episode that really stands out to me is like episode 5.
Harry Mudd? Was that the Harry Mudd one?
Yeah, the one where he keeps Yeah,
that was brilliant.
The time travel one, and I just
that's where it started getting good.
That episode so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like the writing was very, very good, and it was in an episode where I just didn't see things coming because I was on, like, I was so focused, and that happened quite a few times in the second part of the series for me. Because normally I don't watch TV like that. Normally I'm able to actually think, but I was like, oh, keep going.
And interestingly, it was one of those individual episodes that like fit on its own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although within that, though, you do get the relationship between Ash and Michael developing.
Right. And
because they get their kiss, you know.
And the return of Bud and his revenge after, you know, a few episodes before, but. But I think that's where it really started.
Is it Choose Your Pain that is the time travel one? Wait, where are we? Where are you, Mud?
Yeah, that was the one where the same day.
Anyway, again.
I thought it was interesting because they took a, you know, a sci-fi cliche or a trope, or you can call it whatever you want, where you know, you have the day going over and over again. And not only did they do it again, but they almost made fun of the fact that, yeah, we know it. We got to the point of like where it was almost cliche for the character. You know? And I thought that they did great twists. They sort of got past that quickly and then put some really great twists on. And I that was really for me where the show started going, okay, this show's working now. Where up until that point, it's like, not sure where they're going with this. I don't know if I like it. At that point, I'm like, oh, this show's actually good. In fact, I think I posted it to Facebook. Like, hey, by the way, if you didn't like Enterprise, I mean, if you didn't like Discovery, it's actually getting good. You may want to check it out now. And I think that point on, it's good. You know?
I do kind of admire them, though, because I think the pacing for the first few episodes was definitely dictated, or not just the pacing, but the willingness to have the mutiny plot in detail, and the Lorca being this kind of roguish guy who's in the PU, that was going to be challenging for fans to take. And I kind of admired the writers for being willing to risk their reboot of the franchise with this kind of 4 or 5 episodes where people are, and obviously they've definitely lost some people because of that. But I thought it was quite daring writing at the same time to do that, because it was a lot of time invested in that plot.
Yeah,
you know, we don't get to Discovery and who the captain is for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
It was weird, too, that, I mean, the first two episodes has almost none of the main cast in it.
Yeah, because basically the only reason I was willing to watch it is because I love Jason Isaacs. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll watch some Trek. And then he's like, it was, you know, Michelle Yeoh, who I think is also great. But I was like, where's
the whole cast?
Yeah, what's going on? I was like, did I watch the wrong show? Because like every season of Star Trek is on Netflix. Like, did I tune into the wrong thing? So I did find that kind of confusing. And I think they really made it hard for people to get into it. They set up a lot of barriers. Should we get into characters and themes?
It paid off, I thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was about to say something about Burnham anyway. And the other thing I wanted to say is I've heard it argued very well before that original Star Trek is essentially a World War II submarine movie set in space. Like the episodes that are all set on one, like just they're all set on a starship. But the ones the original series, it's really influenced by these submarine films where there is a danger or you don't know where something is out, and there were many times, especially in that Mud episode, where it just felt like that. And the Discovery, which felt so big, there were so many episodes where the ship just was not big enough and tension came out of that, which I really liked.
Great point. Okay, let's get into
some. And my next thing was about Burnham, so yay!
Yeah, let's get into the characters and themes. Let's talk about, I don't know who to do first. Should we talk about Lorca first, just because he was billed as the star, even though he probably weren't in the end, in the end.
And he was in the end. He was like the last up in the credits, too, which I thought was interesting.
Is he dead? Is he dead in the Prime universe?
It's not clear. It's not clear. Not necessarily. So he could come, the actor could come back. But
how do you all like him? Do you like Jason Isaacs as Lorca?
Yeah.
Any haters out there?
No, I love them.
You know, it's funny because one of the things I like most about him doesn't end up being true, which is I liked the idea that we had a Starfleet captain who, you know, first of all, had his own post-traumatic stress, or at least so we believed, from his torture of the by the Klingons, and which apparently didn't happen. And also that we've got, you know, we're at war now. I mean, as much as you want these Starfleet ideals and everything to be perfect, it won't do you any good if we're all dead. You know, so we had a character willing to be dark. And that's one of the reasons why I thought that I almost didn't. Like, at the time, I loved the twist about him. But afterwards, when I think about it, I don't like it as much. Because I would have liked the idea of a captain who said, you know what, we're at war. We have to do these things. It sucks. I'm sorry. It goes against our their ideals, but we have to.
I completely agree with you. That to me is the biggest missed opportunity.
And suddenly instead it's, ha ha ha, see, it was really the evil one. Because a good Starfleet officer would never do these awful things.
And that's what I think is going to be really interesting in season two, is whether they allow themselves to create characters that are nuanced and that do have a dark side that isn't all kind of, you know, Starfleet propaganda style, or whether it just does go into plain vanilla Starfleet. Because I think I would agree with original series fans that was quite hopeful during the period of the Cold War. But I just think that now in the modern world, when we have such complex TV, are people really, maybe there is a market for that kind of quite optimistic,
Orville.
Exactly. We've moved through all that. But I just think it would be a shame, having done something quite interesting in season one, to then, if the tone of the final episode is really what they're going to continue with, I think that's a real missed opportunity.
I agree.
Yeah. The contrasts between the two seasons would be putting off, I think. Like, it would just be too different. Not really the same show if it's like the last episode.
So I'd love to see original Lorca come back, and not, of course, be as Machiavellian as Mirror Universe Lorca, but still be still be someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, and still be someone who was willing to push things and be not Starfleety, or, you know, I think that would be really fascinating, because we don't know who the captain is. So if he was to come back and be made captain, but still be interesting and a little bit dark, I would love it.
I think he's done with the show now. And we might get the, you know, the obligatory, hey, what's he up to? Let's see him again, guest star thing. That'll probably be a big surprise, like maybe mid-season finale or something. But I think he's done.
Sorry, just with Jason Isaacs, what else has he been besides Lucius Malfoy?
The BOA.
Yeah, he's done lots of stuff in the UK. Some films.
And he did the miniseries The OA, which is brilliant. Mm. And he was really good in. He was really good in that.
He's done the movie The Death of Stalin with Armando Iannucci. Brilliant.
Oh, I am so excited to see that. Yeah. I cannot wait. Is it good? Have you seen it?
Yes. Very.
Is it delightful?
Scabrous and silly. I will watch anything with Jason Isaacs in it. I think he's a good guy.
Have you seen The OA?
No.
I have not. And there was another question. I've just lost it. Oh, it wasn't a question. I was actually really disappointed in the beginning of the series to see Jason Isaacs play a good guy, because it's very obvious he really enjoys playing bad. He enjoys it. Like, look at Lucius Malfoy. He really loved that part. You see him in interviews and he's like, yeah, it was just fun messing with the kids. And then it was kind of nice to see that he was evil. So he did get to be like dashing and evil and have fun with it, because he does evil so well.
And you read, and you could tell, like, he was really getting into playing, you know, Lorca once we had the reveal. Like, you could see, like, just the twinkle in his eye almost.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Michael Burnham, who, according to the Star Trek boards that I am now getting familiar with, is incredibly controversial, both as a character and also the actress playing her feelings. Because I like Michael Burnham. I'm invested in a relationship with Ash, but I had no idea it was that controversial to have her as a protagonist.
Well, for one thing, I think it's one of those like Trek things, is that the captain is supposed to be the star of the show. And I mean, clearly she's the star of the show and it's her story, you know. And if anything, she is, you know, epitomizing Starfleet, where you have she goes against the rules and we hate her for that, or, you know, everyone hates her for that. But then in the end, she like sees the light and sees that this was what we should have done
but
all
isn't
along.
That how storytelling evolves? Like, back in the old days, history was always about kings and queens. Now we social history about normal people. And in the old days, Star Trek would have had a male white hero protagonist who was the captain. Exactly. And now we can have, you know, like in Star Wars, you can have a stormtrooper who becomes a hero in the point of view.
Right.
So isn't that just, I don't know, Dana, Mary, how do you feel about it?
I thought I was kind of been really impressed that they decided to go for a not immediately likable primary character. I really enjoyed that. She's very likable, at least to me, by the end. But the first couple of episodes, even into the second part, you're just like, oh, get over yourself, Burnham. You just like had these moments. But I thought it was really nice. And I can kind of understand why they didn't go for a captain. It's not the 60s. We don't see authority figures as this person that we want to adhere to in stories.
That's
a
great point.
Don't and having someone who is on the cusp of leadership is good, because it gives you options, but it also allows, it's a much easier introduction to Star Trek as well, which is, I think, one of the big reasons they're doing these series, because it's been so long since Deep Space, well, not so long since Deep Space Nine, but it's kind of, it almost wants to alienate hardcore Trek fans so it can pull in a larger audience in some parts, maybe doing that. That was 2 points smushed together. Marie? Yeah.
I have no way of comparing anything to other Star Trek shows, so I wasn't weird for me that the captain wasn't the main character. I thought she was actually one of the best written characters.
Oh yeah.
Because she evolves, but not in a too obvious way like some others. And yeah, her interactions with all of the other characters are all really interesting. Mm-hmm. I loved her Vulcan background also. That made her really interesting without making her just something to be like a Spock character, but not quite.
Right.
So she was really interesting.
I liked her a lot, and I think we have to address, you know, the fact that a lot of the hate, I think, partially you know, one of the things you find a lot online is you get people who try to pretend like that they're upset about something for a good reason, but there's really bad reasons. And let's face it, a lot of people just weren't happy about the fact that we have a black woman in as the main character in the show. And you can't say that, so you have to find like an excuse, like, oh, it's not a captain or it's not Starfleet. But, you know, ultimately, there's still a lot of racism and a lot of sexism out there, and I think that
I would hope that's a small minority. I mean, I think there are issues with Michael as a character, and
if you
posit a sort of a Vulcan as your main, or you know, half Vulcan as your main character, right, then you know she's played to be very cold and standoffish, and that does become cold,
right,
and standoffish, right? I mean, it's just harder to engage with someone as your primary character when they're, you know, if you were a Tillian woman open, then it's easier for people to engage and stuff. But I liked the Ash story, but most of
the people who feel like that are the people who love Spock, who was cold and standoffish. So,
but he wasn't the protagonist, you know, he was the sidekick to Spock, though, and that is very different to Kirk.
True.
That is a different dynamic. Okay, so we like Michael Burnham, so that's cool.
Right. She had a great story arc, which is the key.
Oh, yeah, you know, amazing
her,
story.
The whole series was her story, you know, and it was such a good one. And it is her, like, finding Starfleet again. So it totally worked for me, her story.
So let's talk through some of the people
that she could have. Gone without her swallowing the Kool-Aid at the end of episode 15. Oh, that we are Starfleet.
Let's go through some of the people that she has close relationships. So, I mean, we've done Lorca. Were you guys a bit weirded out by the fact that she was dating Lorca in the Mirror Universe?
Not really.
I was like,
it was dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and
creepy.
And Lorca got
creepy.
Some. Like, he came across as being able to get what he wanted out of women very well. You know, when you realize he's the evil one and every person he interacts with, it's kind of like, slept with her, slept with her, slept with his sister, slept with her, slept with her.
Yep.
So it makes sense for Lorca, but because we never meet Mirror Universe Burnham,
yeah,
maybe
we don't
not.
Really know.
Oh, that's true, actually. That does change things, which is a bit of a shame.
But it is still creepy that he was a father figure to her, and then they end up dating, so you get that whole creepy element. But then again, it's the Mirror Universe, so it can be creepy.
But it's also Georgiou saying that he was a father figure. Like, that's not always how the relationship actually is.
Yeah, maybe. It could be a Mia Farrow thing, where she's just, you know, trying to trash the reputation. Let's talk about Georgiou, though, and their relationship.
Yeah.
This kind of weird mother-daughter, mentor-mentee, betrayed. I don't know. There's so much Greek stuff in there. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys like her? Do you like her as an actress? Are you hoping she comes back?
Oh, she has to come back. Come on. I mean, there's no way you would just let her go and then never bring her back. I mean, she will show up where you least expect it, or maybe where you most expect it, depending on...
I find it insane that they would just let the Terran Emperor go.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm
really not happy with her being just free. Or there, actually. I was not really happy with her being brought back, because I don't find the characters from the Terran universe anywhere as interesting and believable as the ones in the Prime universe, and the same goes for their relationships. Like,
right.
I don't quite know what to say of the Burnham Lorca relationship in the Mirror universe, because all the relationships are just it's too much. Like, it's too much drama. So I'm not really happy with the bad Georgiou being in the Prime universe.
Well, I mean, I think one thing you have to remember is that this is based on, you know, stories that were done in the 60s and the 80s, and where you had, I mean, the Mirror Universe was all of this, so they wanted to stay, you know, it was overly drawn. You had, like, you know, betrayals and you know, random screwing and everything that you would, you know, that you're seeing in this came from the original idea, so they did want to stay true to that, and I think it let them go, like, you know, I mean, yeah, it's almost parody nowadays, because there's no subtlety about this Mirror Universe, but I think that was some of the fun of it in the old days, and I think made it some of the fun of it in these days too.
I don't know. Sorry, Dana, were you trying to say something? Or?
Yep. Oh, I did. What's with the old telescope? I rolled my eyes at that, but that's okay. That's old. Cool. Anyway.
I think it was meant to be sappy emotional. It was meant to be. Aww.
We covered this with Strictly Ballroom. You know how I do sappy and emotional.
Right.
It's hard. It's very hard.
Right.
But I did like the fact that she didn't manipulate her way into being in the regular universe. It was Burnham going, I can't watch you die again. I did like how they brought her in. It made sense for the Burnham-Giorgio relationship. I spent way too much time Googling the maturity of the Burnham character,
and it's part of her character arc, isn't it, to show that that mercy and to make that decision, which I just hope they develop that aspect of her. I mean, I think that, to see her face the consequences of that, like if the Empress were to come back and just like be really
maybe she destroyed a planet or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe she destroyed a planet and that's their doing for letting her go.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I do think when it does feel weird, I agree completely, letting her go is insane, but it's
given,
but by that point they are Starfleet again, and that's very much the Starfleet thing to do, because they promised her to do it, and that was the only way she would agree to help them stop the war. And once you've made a horrible promise that made no sense, you know, the Starfleet thing to do, we can't you know, lie to her. And then
you have the honor to keep a promise but not to nuke a planet. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's bizarre. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's weird, but once they've agreed, we're now, once we've already saved the day, we have to let her go, you know, which is bizarre, but is very Star Trek, I think.
Okay, so let's get to another one.
Can I say one more thing about her? Is she, you got to admit that the actress has the best fight scenes. She's absolutely brilliant in every like fight scene, the sword play and all
almost
that.
Almost goes without saying,
just
doesn't it?
So good, right?
Yeah. Why you hire
her?
She's
very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just have a tiny point about Giorgio as well. So it's all about Michael betraying her, which yes, she did, but when in the end, it's not what started the war. Like Michael's idea could have actually stopped the war from being a real thing.
Right.
It's the fact that she couldn't go through with that idea. I mean, she couldn't do it. And by the end, they both go on this mission on the Klingon ship. And I'm not sure that Giorgio died thinking she betrayed me. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's the end of their relationship. That's the way their relationship ended. I'm not so sure about the whole I betrayed her and it started the war, because that's not quite what happened.
But I think she saw it that way. That's the key. I think Burnham in her mind, her guilt made her, you know, I mean, she just was responsible for her death and the death of her almost everyone on her ship. So her guilt is speaking there, I think. Which,
yeah, okay.
It's fine.
Hmm. Okay, sorry. We can move on.
So let's get to her other adopted parent, her literal adopted parent, which is Sarek. What are your feelings about Burnham being Spock's sister, but we never heard about her before?
Sorry.
It's weird.
Sorry,
I'm
I thought
okay
I was on
it.
Mute. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, everyone's related to Spock, why not?
Yeah, it was forced, but it was fine. And it gave us a chance to see Sarek.
Any other Vulcan?
Yeah, like, are there other Vulcans?
There's not, there's just the Spock family. It gave her, like, these unneeded daddy issues with Sarek, where Sarek had to choose only one of them could go to, like, the Vulcan expeditionary whatever,
right?
And
I kind of like
Spock, but Spock ended up but it didn't, like, it means if we see Spock next season, it's all gonna be like, you're my brother,
family,
that's
drama.
The more favored one.
I just feel like
one.
With the
family
Spock
drama.
Family, it's kind of like the Skywalkers, like, not everyone in Star Wars needs to be a Skywalker,
right? I thought it was fine. I agree. It doesn't make sense. But for this kind of a show, you needed to have some more direct link to the other shows. And we've got Sarek for that. And let's face it, James Frayne's amazing anyways. So I mean, I was okay with it.
I would want to know, what is the combined amount you think that writer's room is paid? And was that the only way they could link it to the main characters? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that's all I kind of want to say about Sarek.
It was fan service.
I think by far the more interesting relationship, and indeed probably the most interesting character for me, was Tyler / Volk. Tyler, as a man mm-hmm. who's dealing with having been tortured and indeed raped. So we don't see that often on TV, a man dealing with that kind of vulnerability and trying to work through that. And then it's kind of like he's layered on with Volk, and then it's like, oh, okay, so what is personality here? What's persona?
Here's an interesting question. Was Tyler himself actually raped, or was it just they took his mind out? Like, it's not clear because it's all such a blur in his head.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, in fact, when I was watching
it becomes incredibly difficult as a concept.
Well, had you all heard the theory before you saw it happen or not?
No.
Nope, not me.
No.
Okay, so I did. I watched it knowing that this theory, and the moment I read the theory, I was like, yep, this makes total sense. So I was watching this develop, knowing where it was going to end. And even then, it worked really well, I thought. So I almost got like a second watch because I knew it was going to happen. And I thought it built so brilliantly. But even then, I think his story was compelling before you knew he was a Klingon. And then when you did, it just has another layer to it, you know? The whole post-traumatic stress thing was done so well with him.
Yeah, no, I think he's a fascinating character and a great, never heard of the actor before, but I thought it was one of the most sympathetic performances and mm-hmm. just really love having him on screen. I think it's really important in all sorts of ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Mary, thoughts? Dana?
I was just going to say, he could flip from like charming to broken so quickly.
And I just wanted to say, I do think,
yeah, he was raped, even though that's Vok's memories that he's seeing. Mm-hmm. His body is still being used in a way that he did not consent to. So even though Vok consented, Vok doesn't, like, own him.
It's just, when did Tyler's body actually die? Like,
right.
This scene is, like, it's a memory of Vok, so it's something which happened to Vok's body, not Tyler. So... But I do agree.
Well,
that
is it? I thought just it was Tyler's memories, body.
Well, I don't know. The way I interpreted it is that we see Tyler's body because he hasn't realized. I mean, he doesn't know that he's both. So
right.
He has these flashes of memory, okay. And his tortured brain transforms it into his body. But I don't know if that's actually because the way he convinces himself. He tells the story that she was his handler and his torturer, and that this was all part of the torture. But I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which doesn't change the fact that this is hugely traumatizing for him, and mm-hmm. that he does live that as a rape. But I'm not saying mm-hmm. That's not the issue. But I'm saying that it's unclear actually when the whole mm-hmm. merging of the two was made,
right.
And what happened before and after. But it is truly really it raises questions like how. Can two people really? I mean, it's the perfect spy, but he still exists. Like, does Tyler actually still exist, or is it? It's
right.
It's confusing.
And we don't. I mean, that's yet to be explored, isn't it? In season two,
yeah.
I think that's why Michael Burnham is rightfully confused, and I mean, that's why I think the finale was very powerful, the final few episodes, because mm-hmm. she obviously does love some version of him, but doesn't trust her feelings. And that to me was real emotional wrench from mm-hmm. quite a frothy series in some ways.
Definitely the whole thing between them. I mean, he just tried to kill her and all that. And I got the one thing that did bother me a lot was him like guilt tripping her when she's like, he's like, oh, you can't love me because I'm a Klingon who killed your parents. Like, wait a minute, you just tried to kill her. You just betrayed the Federation, and whether or not you meant to do this or it's your fault, and I understand you're completely a victim here, you just did awful things to her and you don't have a right to be guilt tripping him. Like, I thought it was, if anything, a little too Star Trek
that
20 minutes after he just betrayed the entire Federation, we're going to be like, oh, hey, let's have dinner on the bridge. Yeah, let's have a meal together. Everything's okay now because we feel bad for you and we're Starfleet and we're better than that. It almost felt too happy. Like, why are you letting this guy who's a Klingon, or we don't know how much of him is left or what, why are you letting him roam free on the ship? And now I'm going to guilt trip my ex-girlfriend for being mad that I lied.
But then suddenly, do you feel Laurel got off easy? I mean, they basically used her to be the mystery to the other side and end the war. I mean, was that just all too... I mean, she'd done some pretty horrific stuff too. So
exactly.
Was that too easy a get out for her?
I think for both of them. Yeah. I think in the case of Laurel...
I don't know. It's like she's just like the lesser evil, right?
That's exactly what I was just going to say. You know,
but
she's at least an honorable Klingon as opposed to these people coming and destroying, slaughtering everyone. I think that's the feeling, I think. I don't know if it really was.
Well, at least there's the idea that there's an ideology behind the whole thing. It's not just
chaos.
Conquering and chaos, but that she's part of the reason why I don't quite understand how Klingons work. And like, how do they think? What do they feel? Like, she obviously has feelings. She's not just a savage who just wants to destroy everything, whatever the reason. But most of the other Klingons are just not like that. So,
mm-hmm, right?
Can you actually reason with Klingons? Can you talk with them in a meaningful way? That's not clear. I'm not sure it's very consistent throughout. Well,
if we're gonna take it from a Star Trek point of view, I think one of the reasons why they might see Laurel as the lesser of, you know, all 24 evils, since they're all houses, is that if you think about it, in many ways, she is the Klingon version of Starfleet, because you've got all these random houses just sort of randomly killing and attacking, which is what's happened in the 6 months we were gone, or 9 months, whatever it was they were gone. But Laurel is saying, I'm going to bring us all together as a Federation of Klingons. So if anything, she is putting that ideal that the Federation stands for and Starfleet stands for, of we're going to bring all our people together in one group of unified happiness. And so, I mean, yeah, they're going to, you know, conquer and destroy, but at least they're together and happy. So if anything, it makes sense that Starfleet could understand her because she's the closest they've got.
Okay. Well, let's get out of the darkness and into the light with some gorgeous characters. So can we talk about the awesomeness that is Saru?
Oh, yes, please.
Awesome. Yay!
I wish he was going to be captain next season.
I hope he does become captain. I hope the fan love is enough to make him that character.
Because, I mean, they're going to meet the captain, whoever that's going to be. That's where they're heading. But maybe it won't work out that way.
Yeah, I think it won't work out. Maybe season two will be about it not working out. Then at the end of season two, it's Saru.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hope, because he and Tilly just all around brilliant. And lovely. I have nothing like of sophistication to say on this.
Doug Jones needs to stop making me fall in love with monsters or aliens or whatever. I saw The Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I haven't. Is it good?
It is.
Yeah. It's pretty. It has the best wallpaper I have ever seen in like any.
It's hot.
Again,
Okay.
It's so pretty. It's very Del Toro.
I did like the episode that he got to, you know, his starring episode that he got, you know, where they're on the planet and he almost betrays them. But I thought that was really well done. And I'm glad he got an episode, because as much as we liked him, he didn't get a lot to do other than, you know, he takes over as captain for a while. But this season, he was kind of underdone.
Yeah, but hopefully,
I
hope that with him and Tilly, that they've seen what the actors can do. They've seen what the fans want, and you know, we see more. Tilly fan, who wrote in Tilly? Give me a Tilly defense. tell us why you think Tilly's so amazing.
Oh, she's just awesome. I mean, in many ways, I mean, let's face it, she's like kind of the fan character. Like, we're supposed to root for her, because she's, you know, if any of us were on the Enterprise, we would be the, you know, we wouldn't be perfect. We would mess up. We would, you know, so she's meant to be like our audience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And and you gotta love her for that, you know. I mean, yeah, she's maybe a little silly, and it's, you know.
But that's why I love Mirror Universe Tilly as well. I just love the ring. Right. I thought that was brilliant.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. And Georgie seeing that aspect of her. Yeah, I know you're back in the. I know you're Prime Universe Tilly now, but you still have that in you, that little toughness. So.
Right. Yeah. And if anything, she is very Starfleet in the I'm coming in wide-eyed, opened eyes, and it turns out she's absolutely brilliant, of course, because you know she's got to be, right. I mean, it almost would have been better if she'd been like a failure and like, you know, and had, you know, screwed things up a lot. That might have almost been more interesting storytelling. But if you're going to go for iconic, you know, idealism, you know, she embodies that even more than Burnham in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then another really favorite actor of mine and great character, Stamets, who I loved. One of the things that really annoyed me about this series is, and this is a well-known issue people have in general, is why is it that when you have a beautiful gay quasi-marriage that they can't be happy, that one of them has to get killed? Even though it was beautifully handled, and I loved when his ex-partner who died was in the kind of Spore universe, and that they could kind of contact each other but with memory, and he could get a closure on it that way. But I love the actor who played his other half, and I just wanted to see them carry on and just be gay and be happy, and why can't that happen?
Well, you know, normally I'd agree with that, but I think we're now at the point where we have seen other, you know, gay couples on TV, and we have seen that I thought for story it really worked.
Who have we seen?
I mean, you see it in like, the name of that show now. There are other shows, what's Modern Family, you've got it, I mean, I'm not saying there's a lot of it, but I think that, I mean, let's face it, there's no ongoing relationships on the show. And I think it almost is interesting that the only, you know, stable and healthy relationship on the show is a gay couple.
Oh, no, exactly. So, yeah, that's a good like, point, kudos to them for doing it, but then they have to snatch it away.
And the death was so shocking. It came out of nowhere.
Oh,
like, all of a sudden, like, yeah. Oh, my, I just remember sitting there, even though I knew what was going on, because, again, I knew the whole Klingon thing, I was watching it happen and went, oh, they went there? Oh, my God, he killed. Yeah.
And that was good. It was like the Ned Stark moment, like, wasn't it? It was like, oh,
right?
Shit.
Oh, yeah.
Someone that we love, really love, that, can get killed.
That was the moment you knew that this show can go like anywhere. Like, oh my God, you know, not only are we making him a Klingon, but he freaking killed the ship's doctor, you know?
It was great TV, but I love that actor since My So-Called Life, and I was happy he was back. And Ricky died. Mm-hmm. They killed Ricky.
If in fact Stamets had really died in the next episode, like it seemed like he did, then I would have been bothered. Wait, we killed them both two episodes in a row. We've killed the only gay characters. That would have bothered me. But since he didn't die, which you knew Stamets wasn't going to be dead. I liked that they did give him his, you know, their farewell. And it was so well done that I'm okay with it. Plus, it gives us the chance to have Stamets maybe meet someone else.
Aww.
Go on. You know.
Yeah, I hope so. Does anyone have anything of interest to say about Cornwall? I put her in, but...
Who?
Or any other characters that I've missed that you really love.
She's the Admiral.
The Admiral.
Yeah.
Ah, stick up her ass, yep.
She's still hooked up with Lorca.
She just really annoyed me in every single way. She just bad decisions all around, and then she just gets totaled by
Because
Burnham,
Starfleet
like,
makes
yeah,
bad
whatever.
Decisions all around in season one, right? I mean, it's not it's shiny, happy. But that's okay, because Starfleet is becoming the Starfleet that you know in Enterprise, and that's part of the arc. You know, Michael Burnham has an arc, but so does Starfleet, right? So I guess what disappointed me in that final episode is we need to see that Starfleet discovering what its core values are going to be.
Right.
We didn't need that to happen in an episode. That could have happened over season two very profitably.
Right.
Which kind of brings me
to... I feel like
in...
someone so far up would be a lot smarter.
One would hope.
She is not, which is frustrating. Like, it would always make a better story if it was someone within the ship that had wanted to blow up the Klingon planet, because then I feel like there would have been a lot more tension instead of her just coming in and going, yeah, we're going to save Georgia. We're going to blow up the planet. This is what we're doing. Oh, wait, no, we're not, because we are Starfleet.
Agree. Well, I think this nicely takes us into, you know, what is Starfleet? What are these characters going to do? Mm-hmm. Into questions for season two. But I guess the biggest meta question is, do you all in turn consider Discovery to be in the Prime Universe now? Or is it just a messed up, non-canonical, crazy place? Do you care?
I don't think there was anything that was un-Star Trek, un-canonical about the show. I mean, they did a good job of fitting it in. I mean, yeah, there's little quirks and, you know, fitting Spock in's a little weird. But I think, I mean, there's nothing there that makes me go, this couldn't have happened, this didn't happen in that universe. If anything, it's building to find out what this universe was about.
I agree. But it does bother some people, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, but some people are gonna be bothered. I'm not sure it's a real question. Like, it would be, oh yeah, the reason it's not like usual Star Trek, it's because it's not actually the prime universe that, I mean, then yeah. Don't do Star Trek. I mean, I just...
Right.
So I don't think it's a real question. It's just something.
Okay, so who's going to be captain in season
Wonder.
Two?
Yeah.
Someone we've not heard of yet, someone we have from the canon.
I would hope it wouldn't be someone from canon. We're not going to get fan service here, I would hope, but you never know. I'm wondering if they're going to, I wonder now that you say it, if they're not going to have maybe someone come on and try to be captain, but then they end up with, maybe he'll die or maybe he won't stay on and we'll end up with Saru. I really hope that it's Saru, but you know.
Any other candidates for who should be captain out there? Any fans? So, because now, is Burnham's now the same rank as Saru, right? She's now Commander Burnham.
Yeah, I feel like at the end of the series, or at least a few years down, we'll end up with Captain Burnham, but I think it's a little too soon, given that she was just a war criminal like yesterday.
A minute ago. But then they made her a commander, so maybe her record's expunged and she's good to go. I mean, that was the theme of the final episode, right? Yeah. Yeah, final episode was like, it was just, okay, we reset, so.
Right, but that'll be a little too quick, though, to go.
Do any of you know?
Talking about the final episode, just, is Tilly able to do captain training on the Discovery, or does she have to go to Starfleet Academy and not be on the ship anymore?
I'm sure she'll be on the ship, because we've already, I mean, that's my other question is, are we, how much are we going to see of Laurel and, what's his name?
Ash.
And Ash. Are we going to see more of Ash and Laurel next season? I'm assuming they're going to be recurring characters, but will they be like every week, or will they just be like occasionally, or will we get a, like in every episode, we'll get 5 minutes of what's meanwhile back on the Klingon homeworld.
So do you guys think we will see more Enterprise, Pike, Spock in the next series? Or do you know that? Have you read any like boards or articles that have hinted at that?
Well, we saw them in the finale, and then we're going to continue from that. So presumably that'll be the first episode, won't it?
That is going to cause endless controversy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yep.
I would love it because I don't care. I mean, like, I'm happy to see that stuff.
I don't care.
Yeah, same. But it's probably, I'm not sure if it's that good an idea. We've already established that they don't really care about keeping the old Star Trek fans into this. So I'm not sure. But
yeah, there's enough new people to get into it, right?
I don't agree. I mean, I think if anything, the finale was completely, in fact, the entire arc was meant to be, haha, we tricked you. See, we said it wasn't Starfleet, but look, we are. And in fact, let's smash you over the head with it in the finale with a really, really like bad speech where we talk about how Starfleet ideals are perfect. So, I mean, I feel like they were reinforcing, they were trying to prove themselves to the Star Trek fans.
All right. But they did, like that was the end goal maybe, but they did take a huge risk before that actually lost a few of them. So maybe they will continue in that direction and also take the risk of actually bringing new Spock and new Pike.
They'll sit down when all the dust settles on the season. They'll figure out what worked and didn't work and do lots of testing, and we will then get season two. I mean, the only things I would predict confidently is you'll probably get more Harry Mudd and we'll get more Emperor, just because they're big characters and they were popular.
Right. Now, I wonder, though, when they do, I mean, with the new Enterprise, with Enterprise where it stands now, Pike is captain, so we don't need to get Spock. But I'm wondering if they're going to get Zachary Quinto to come back as Spock, or
surely he's way too expensive.
No.
Not necessarily. For one episode, they might be able to. One.
Like, do continuity of casting. That would be kind of interesting.
Or even like have him walk by in the background or something.
Oh, that would be very cool. They could do that with CGI. They wouldn't even need him for that.
Right. Or one scene, you know, just to have him in it.
Okay.
They have to. They kind of have to, I think.
Any burning final points that we didn't get to that you were desperate to tell people about as before we wrap up?
What's the deal with technology? Because I know a lot of the fans were, like OG fans, were a bit pissed that the Discovery's technology was way too far of, you know, the original series. But does that mean at some point the Discovery is going to be blown up and all that technology is going to be sucked into the nothingness with it? Is that how they're going to get to the original series?
I don't know.
Unworkable, isn't it? Like the spore drive isn't going to be a thing because it's just not practically workable.
Because it isn't later, right? If it worked, they would have brought it back.
I think the rest of it is just this is a new series and everything has to look a little bit more modern. But I think that was the major thing, right? And I think we've got a good explanation of why they can't take that forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine. One of the things I think will be interesting to see is in, you know, before the next season comes back, will they win back the old school fans who, you know, now that they hear, oh, see, they did go Starfleet, will some of them come back, watch them, like, binge it and go, oh, okay, I like this now?
No, I think they'll need to hear it from people 3 episodes into the new one. Because actually, at the moment, we don't know. That tonal shift was so abrupt. We genuinely don't know what they're going to do in season two until we see it. So I think it'll take a few episodes into season two to really get them back, personally. Right, so with that, I think we'll wrap up the episode because it's going to be very long with the after show too. Who has future Vox they want to raise the banners for or excited that they're doing and want to give a bit of a shout out to?
I guess there's going to be a Jessica Jones season 2, yes. Probably. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we did the Jessica Jones season 1 now. Right. So, yeah, that's the goal, I guess.
So sorry I missed that.
Me too.
It was a shame, yeah.
It was really great to listen to that. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's great.
And we just did a Kraken cast reunion Australian cinema, best of Australian cinema episode.
Great. Looking forward to
that. We just did earlier today. In fact, we recorded it. And it looks like we're finally actually going to make the Doctor Who one happen.
Yes. So
the end of Peter Capaldi's era. In fact, that's something Marie and I have to talk about in a little bit.
Fantastic. I look forward to listening to that. I am also under the influence of my better half going to be watching Doctor Who from the new series. So.
Oh, okay.
Great.
There we go. Another thing that I totally ignored and do not have any interest in watching back episodes of, but will progress forward, I think. And then for me, I guess, and all of us, actually, there'll be rereads galore. Thank you very much for joining, everyone.
Thank you, Bina.
Thank you.
We'll have a podcast with all of you soon. And for listeners, we hope you tune in to more Vassals of Kingsgrave stuff. There will be lots of nerdy goodness coming your way soon. And if you would like to follow us, you can on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a YouTube channel. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search for Vassals of Kingsgrave or VOK Podcast and you'll find us. And if you want to get involved, start chatting about stuff, maybe join some episodes, feel free to join the forums of A Podcast of Ice and Fire. And in the meantime, have a great week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, Stephen. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I feel a bit stir crazy. It's snowing a laughably small amount from a Canadian perspective. But England has ground to a halt and I haven't left my house because I'm scared. So, how many spoonfuls of Saru soup out of 5 would you give Star Trek Discovery? Already with a sighing?
Two.
Wow. So this is why I wanted you on.
I was fighting a 1, to be clear.
This is why I wanted you on, because I think it's going to be a good contrary opinion. So I think it's going to be helpful for me and the listeners to know, what's your backstory with Trek? Are you like a longtime fan? Have you seen everything else? What expectations did you come to Discovery with?
Yeah, I definitely think a person's history with Star Trek makes for a big difference for how you interpret the show. Because I think a person who has nothing, like very little Star Trek history, could probably watch Discovery and get quite a bit more than a long-term fan. I've watched every single episode of Star Trek except for the original series. I've watched a couple of them multiple times all the way through. Wow. And my favorite Star Trek, and inarguably the best Star Trek, is Deep Space Nine.
Huh, okay. So were you excited when you heard there was going to be a new Trek as a big Trek fan?
Yes, I was extremely excited. I think this is a great moment for Star Trek to come back to television.
And why is that?
Star Trek is, if you look at other science fiction shows at the moment, there's clearly a lot of room for social commentary in fiction. And you can look at that through things like Black Mirror or even something like Handmaid's Tale, that there is just a lot of space for someone taking kind of the cutting edge of technology and society and playing with those ideas in new and interesting ways. Because I think most of our societies, and not, you know, Canada, United States, Britain, elsewhere in the world, are dealing with a moment of profound change. And Star Trek has often stepped into moments of social and economic change and offered some comment on them.
And usually hopeful comment, am I right? Or is that a cliche? Because I grew up when I was in school, and I went to school with, it was a single sex school, and a lot of the girls were heavily into science in general, mm-hmm. and a lot were into sci-fi. And there was definitely a bit of a divide between the Star Wars people and the Star Trek people. And the Star Wars people would have said that they live in a grubbier, grittier, nastier world, and the Trek people live in shiny, shiny spaceships, and everything resolves neatly, and it's all very optimistic, and United Nations, and...
Yeah, and
that's
I think,
unfair, I'm sure, but...
I think it is... I think there's a certain, there's different, okay, let me start that clean. There are different kinds of Trek fans. If you are a fan of the original series and the Next Generation, and maybe even Voyager, you're very much interested in the episodic, let's explore new worlds and use our values to correct problems. And like, ultimately, it's communication and tolerance that will lead the way into a bright future. But if you look at especially later Star Trek, certain parts of Voyager and especially Deep Space Nine, it says, okay, let's take these values and challenge them or make them brush against other cultures that just outright reject them. And how do you resolve these kind of conflicts? Right.
Okay, so that sounds really interesting. Maybe I should give that a go. Can I start from there? Can you just jump into DS9?
Yeah, you could probably get like a half-decent primer about what is going on here. But, you know, it was television in the 90s, so there's lots of information set up because they didn't expect people necessarily to come over from something else entirely. You know, I'm sure they expected to get a couple of the Next Generation fans watching, but you probably have all the background information right now in your head that you need to know.
Okay.
There's also been a few articles over the last couple of years that said like why DS9 is like secretly the best Star Trek and how it paved the way for the golden era of television because it was a very serialized show. It was a war drama in the last few seasons. It had some really great elements and it was character based. So
okay, well that sounds valid. So you heard that is it CBS in America was making Discovery. You're excited. You watch episode one and what is it that or the first couple episodes and what is it that happens? Because you were very vocal on Twitter from early that this was not your Trek to use Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones terminology, not my Stannis.
I may have been hyperbolic in the moment because I don't quite recall. I remember a friend and I who are big Trekkies, though I for the love of God would not apply that word to anyone or myself, we started to feel uneasy very early on about the direction of the show. And as a longtime friend, I hate to sound like this, but they made a lot of changes, and some of them felt like changes for the sake of changes and didn't add anything particularly interesting. So I just started to have concerns about like, okay, what is the point of this show? And it was drifting in a whole bunch of different directions simultaneously.
And you didn't feel, this is what I heard this from lots of people like you who are proper Star Trek fans, including Nadine Arenies on the forums. It was just like, I just don't need to watch this. This is not Trek. And lots of people saying, I actually prefer the Orville, which I've also been enjoying. And
yeah, I watched the Orville.
And I kind of figured that once you figured out that Lorca was from the MU, that would explain a lot of the weirdnesses and the whole mutant, you know, like, so you didn't feel that resolved your issues with how far it had drifted from core values early on, because it was a risk, right? The writers took a risk in establishing something a little bit funky and anti-Trek for a lot of episodes.
I'd actually like to go completely against you on that one.
Okay.
Because I think making Lorca come from the alternate universe is pulling your punch. Basically, it's this bizarre, like, the alternate universe is just supposed to be this fun diversion that lets the actors, like, ham it up and see people in different roles and just kind of have fun. It's usually, in the tradition of the series, it's not supposed to be a big component to any show. So it was interesting that they tried it, but how they did it actually undermined their own credibility, in my view, because humans are not perfect. And that is one of the big criticisms of Star Trek among viewers, that it's this utopian vision of the future. Where's the conflict? How come humanity is just good? And I think the idea that Lorca was a do anything to make, you know, to make it happen, a war commander, makes him a far more interesting character than, oh, he's just evil from the evil side of the universe or the evil universe. Not that he's a normal human who grew up in Starfleet and in the Federation, who's come to different moral choices and values. And let's see how that plays out.
Hmm. I did have a lot of people say to me that they thought it was a cop-out when Lorca became MU, because actually having someone that rogue and gritty in the Prime universe would have been far more interesting to see play out in the context of Trek.
Yeah, and if you're going to say, okay, we're going to explore this alternate timeline where a hot war kicks off between the Federation and the Klingons, you could see how in the peaceful timeline, someone like Lorca would have like had a quiet career and not have stood out. But if war comes and his brand of leadership becomes valuable, how he comes much more to the forefront, changing the character of Starfleet to a certain degree. But they abandoned that.
Hmm.
And they abandoned it with Burnham, too. And they got brave and then they pulled their punch. And I guess it was an exciting idea. Like, what if the captain's not who you think he was? Okay, but you were doing something interesting by saying something new about Star Trek, and then you decided to run away with it as fast as you could.
And is that the principal charge you have against it when you said it was drifting early on? Or is there other stuff as well that you didn't like?
I made a list.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, let's go. Let's do it. And I'll try and be devil's advocate.
There's 9 items on this list.
Christ alive. Let's go. Run it. Do it.
Okay. The first thing that I want to say about the show is that you would think in the golden era of television, the show would be about characters.
And how is it not about characters?
It has nothing. It has terrible characters.
Oh my God. I mean, just the character of Ash Tyler for a start is so fascinating.
Oh, Pina, you and I have to have words.
I think the interaction between Burnham and Georgiou is really fascinating. I love the development of Tilly. Oh, I just think it is about character. It's not going to be about character in the same way as like a David Simon HBO miniseries where they have 12 one-hour episodes and they can take their time just leisurely, because there has to be a certain amount of plot, right? This is Trek. But I think sure. Within that, I definitely was emotionally engaged with people and on a character journey with them. I couldn't disagree with more.
Yeah. I found the characters inconsistent. I found most of them fairly faceless. And I feel like I'm a fairly close watcher of television, a fairly critical watcher of television. But until I started to sit down and try to plot out some of my reasons why I didn't like the show, or I'd sit down to watch a new episode, and I could barely name any of the characters on the screen.
Like I'm flabbergasted. Yeah, my ghasts are flabbered at this point.
The actor who plays Stamets, the chief engineer or the lead scientist or whatever his title is, because I'm not sure. He posted a photo on his Twitter account saying, like, this is the best crew I've ever worked on. And it was a photo of the cast. And I looked at that photo and I said, on a good day, I could maybe name 4 people in this picture. And there was, you know, easily over a dozen. And they try to pull on that, especially at the conclusion of like, oh, here's all these men and women who've served beside us. Like, okay, what's the name of the redheaded woman with the metal appliance on her face? Who's like apparently supposed to have some emotional resolution at the end. Like, who are you? Who is the pilots or the various other crewmen on the bridge? So the cast is, I think they're trying to get away with like, we have a big cast and there's lots of interesting characters, but there's not. And you can say, fair enough, those are secondary. But I think even someone like Hugh, Stamets's partner who dies, is so brief and so fleeting. Like,
and yet I would argue that it's the power of the acting and writing that I really cared. And I was deeply affected by that. And I think one of the very few criticisms I would put against Discovery is that it falls into that trap of not allowing a gay couple to be happy.
Yeah.
But I really was very powerfully affected by that. I was totally invested in it. It's amazing, isn't it, how subjectivity is so wildly different? Because I think we read a lot of stuff similarly and like a lot of the same stuff. But I wonder if those first few episodes, realizing it was so not what you were expecting, raised your guard in a way that I came into it with nothing, and therefore after that it was going to be so hard for it to defy that or jump over those barriers and convince you.
I think part of it was the show just felt silly at points.
Offending Trek people, isn't that kind of the point of Trek?
Isn't that what the Orville gets so well? I don't mean campy. I mean, so Burnham mutinies, causes a battle, and the Shenzhou is destroyed. Okay, interesting opening premise. Fine, I'm on board. Let's see what you do with this. She gets rescued by Lorca and the Discovery, and the entire crew of the Shenzhou is on the Discovery. Like, her whole crew that survived got transferred to this new ship, if I remember correctly, which just seems so strange. Just to backtrack briefly on characters, they're not all bad. I actually quite like Saru. I quite like Tilly. But aside from them, I really don't have positive, I have neutral or negative feelings about the cast.
How do you feel about Burnham?
I think she's weak and uninteresting. Wow. I think they made the mistake of trying to connect her too much to the universe of Star Trek.
Like, yeah, I find the whole idea that Spock had a sister that he never mentioned a bit weird.
I find that stuff awful. I hate that kind of retconning in a fleshed out universe. I also think it's just weak when everyone knows each other and we're all connected and we're all family. And isn't it weird? It's like, or you're in a universe with hundreds of planets and billions of souls, and she could come from somewhere new and interesting to shine a different kind of light onto Star Trek. And instead we get, no, isn't it great how she's Spock's half-sister-ish kind of person, or stepsister? Or
the,
no?
The difference is we're both bothered by it, but I could just let it slide because I'm not as invested in the Trekverse. Whereas for you, that was obviously a deal killer.
Well, I just also think it leads to inconsistencies. She's been raised as a Vulcan, and so she's supposed to have this like cold, logical, dispassionate view on things, yet she falls in love with Ash. You know, it's basically a love and first sight story.
But isn't that, I mean, like Spock in the, like, the J.J., you know, he's in love with Uhura and whatnot. I mean, just because you're Vulcan doesn't mean you can't fall in love at first sight.
I think that they would put aside their feelings for the fact that they have, like, duty and...
Yeah, but she is very conflicted. I mean, her whole arc is about inner conflict, isn't it? Anyway, sorry, I'm probably jumping around in your list. Please proceed down your list of
No,
eight.
No, it's okay. I would also say about Burnham is that she feels like a window on more interesting characters. I think Admiral Cornwall is a far more interesting character than Michael Burnham ever is. I think Lorca is a more interesting character. And I think Giorgio has something going for her. I think that gets a little muddled because she dies so quickly. And then she's just kind of like a phantom character until she comes back as the Empress. I think it might have been a mistake to have her die in the pilot. Yeah.
But then, I mean,
when I think about that show, it's like, who would I rather be following on Discovery? I would rather the show have Tilly as the main character, as like this bright-eyed cadet trying to like make her way and climb the ladder. And then all of a sudden, the beautiful optimism of Starfleet and the Federation is challenged by this brutal Klingon war. That's more interesting to me.
But we do get some of that. I mean, Tilly is one of the main characters.
She is, but she's definitely not the main character.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Okay, so you hate Burnham. On to the next one. Because, I mean, Burnham, people not getting on either with the character or indeed with the actress has been a major thing on boards and forums if you're into that kind of thing. So
yeah,
that's a very common criticism.
It is. I don't think the acting is particularly bad. I think it's what she's been given and the kind of character. I don't see it. Like, the point of this is it's supposed to be serialized television, and I don't see her arc through the season. I feel like she's all over the place.
Okay.
I could hear your profound disagreement.
Yeah, but that's okay, because I'm going to have a whole nother podcast to talk with people who love this series.
So yep.
I need to let you get your stuff out. Okay.
One aspect that I really had a problem with is just the strange narrative swings that the plot just moves so quickly, and maybe that's a consequence of having a short season.
I was going to say, isn't that just a short... That's the fact that it's on CBS and it's got 40-minute episodes and it's got a power through, and that it's not a Netflix or HBO show, no?
Sure, but then you make choices and you say, maybe we don't need to have six big twists in the season. Maybe we can get by on...
The twist was so good. Oh, I love the twist.
Sure, but okay, so let's say... I'm just trying to think, like, what, like, they had the ongoing story with the spore drive, like, all that was going all over the place, like, trying to figure out the tardigrade and all that other stuff. And it's like, what are we doing with this? Like, what is the plan here? And it just seems to jump all over the place. You have the mirror universe, which is fine. I think that was an interesting idea, and I liked seeing the, like, evil Terran Empire. But, like, there was just a lot of things going on and no room for it to develop. And you could say that's a consequence of the season, but I also think, you know how much you can fit in when you're designing the season.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's just a... I find this kind of contrast very acute, because I think we live in a world where many of us haven't yet cut the cable. So I get a lot of kind of, so to say, mainstream network TV that's still working in a very kind of old-fashioned, plot-driven, huge moves, wild gyrations in a short space of time, short episodes kind of format. And at the same time, I'm consuming a lot of Netflix, which is much more lengthy. And I do find going from one to the other quite jarring. But I think I would honestly say that I don't think that's a fault of this show as of that genre of TV and the demands that it makes on storytellers and writers.
I think you have a point there. But a couple of times, and I wish I made a list for this, it seems like they have world-changing events occur and none of it gets fleshed out, or not significantly fleshed out, right? So probably the biggest one, which is point nine on my list, is the Klingon War. The Klingon War should be a huge part of the season, and it feels like needless background noise. It is an insane, massive consequence of Burnham's early actions, and yet it doesn't feel real in the show.
I just thought that's how Trek always was. There was always some war with some random aliens in the background.
No.
I mean, it just didn't bother me as much, right? But yeah. So yeah, you presumably, then did you hate the ending because it was just resolved so neatly as well?
That is point number seven on my list, the Deus Ex Machina ending. There is no consequences to the season. Everything that happened is like, well, okay.
But there are Michael huge Burnham, consequences in... to the season. Lorca basically is dead in the PU. The Empress is now at large and I bet is going to come back and cause some shit in the future. You've got this character arc of Burnham and Ash, which is so moving and takes them, and indeed Tilly and Saru, to totally different places as people. And we still haven't resolved who's going to lead Discovery. So there have been consequences.
Okay, so maybe I'm thinking more of the bigger picture. First, it's not common that a military organization forgives mutiny and lets the person rejoin the force. Shrug. So Burnham started the Klingon War, and because she was like the right person at the right time at the end of it, like all is forgiven. Now, that's actually kind of a problem in Star Trek in general, that as long as you save the day at the end, you're okay. It doesn't matter what crimes you've committed. The Spore Drive gets put on a shelf. So this universe-breaking piece of technology that was like the central story arc of the season.
Yeah, but that's because no one can use it without killing themselves.
Right. So,
but you know it's going to get put on the shelf, otherwise, you know, current Trek would be powered by it, right? So that's not surprising.
Right, but then I wonder why bring it in the first place.
Because it's going to show, it allows Burnham to show empathy with the beastie monster. It allows the kind of the whole love story between Stamets and his husband to develop, and the consequences of that, and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, but it's not necessary for that stuff.
Oh, I think it is, because I mean, what else are you going to have a single unifying thing that allows all that to happen? I think it's elegant writing.
I don't see it as... I always have problems when someone in any kind of fiction just says, I'm going to introduce this idea that would fundamentally upset everything. Oh, but don't worry, we'll put it in a box now. It's like, okay. For another thing you mentioned, Lorca's probably almost assuredly not dead.
The Prime Universe Lorca's dead, don't we? And also Jason Isaacs just took a one-season contract.
Sure. But he fell into... What is it? What are the spore drives called? The spore thingies. It starts with an M.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. He fell into a ball of that energy, which allows you to travel through time and space. So, I mean, yeah, we saw his body dissolve into it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it came back. So, you know, until I see a body with a bunch of holes in it, I don't assume anyone's dead.
Quentin's alive.
That's your dragon fire right there. That ball of mitochondrial network or whatever it's called.
I seriously don't think he'll be back. I think Jason Isaacs signed up knowing it was just a one season gig, but you know, and he wasn't such a fan favorite that I think they'd be luring him with money to come back, whereas I think Georgie was. So yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. What's next on the list?
I already talked about this. Moral simplicity. Lorca offered us the opportunity to show ends justify the means. Starfleet officer. Instead, his actions are dismissed as crazy evil man from the mirror universe. So shrug. You love it, and I hate it, Ash and Burnham's relationship.
Oh, it's so heartbreakingly gorgeous. How do you not believe in love and romance in this way?
I do. I just don't believe it for these two.
I do.
I get none of it.
And even, like the whole Laurel character is kind of tragic, too. I mean, oh, man.
Yeah, Laurel and Vok and that old stuff, that's... Yeah, it was okay.
But it's not an argument, right? Like either it touches you or it doesn't. So yeah. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, I think it's the initial concept was bad, and then it broke the continuity, but not in a particularly inventive way. The show seems to borrow icons from the franchise, but pays little attention to the legacy. So everyone gets to have Starfleet badges, and the ships are all Starfleet shaped, and all of the Klingons are our bad guys. But they fail to do what Star Trek does, which is, tackle big, bold ideas. And it was accomplished in very little substantial way.
Weren't you excited when you saw the
Oh.
Enterprise hove into view? And didn't seeing all the iconography just warm the cockles of your little Trekkie heart?
Nope.
I
Didn't.
really liked the uniforms as well. I thought they were badass. But
I just I think, like I said about making Burnham Spock's summit sister, there are hundreds of ships in Starfleet. Why bring the Enterprise in? Like, I get it. Like, it's but it just feels like fan service to me rather than something interesting. And
I'm not
I'm
even
very
like a Star
concerned.
Trek fan, and I was kind of excited to see it back and looking all shiny and new and lovely.
Yeah, but I think the thing I worry about is like, okay, so what are they going to pull for next season? Are they going to do something as ham-fisted as like Kirk will somehow end up the captain of the Discovery for a period of time, or? Like, are we going to see all, like it's 10 years before the original series is supposed to happen,
So
even though
Pike is captain of Enterprise at this point.
that's right, Christopher Pike is the captain. But there's how to put this? How do we have the Klingons win the war against the Federation so totally, and yet like everything still seems to be the same? You know what I mean?
But
Like
they didn't
how
win
does
the war. There was a peace treaty.
yeah. It's okay, so but human worlds and colonies were still conquered. Ships were blown up. Presumably, millions of people died as the Klingons kind of like played with humanity for spoils of war. And yet, like, no, it's okay. We signed a peace accord. Like, there's still like
That's
there's
how
consequences to
that's
every
what
war.
happens in life, right? I mean, like we fought World War II, then we signed a peace, and that was that.
Sure, but then that's like saying afterwards they didn't need to rebuild France and Britain and Germany.
Yeah, but the point is, this show isn't set in France or Germany, it's set in a bomber flying overhead.
I suppose, but they decided to go down an alternate timeline. So when they hearken back to the original timeline, it always just feels really strange to me.
I mean, maybe you will see that in season two, in fairness. I mean, the war ended, in the last episode, so you can't assume they're not going to show that and the consequences of it. And, the peace may not hold beyond an episode, for all you know.
Yeah, that's true. They do have the space to show the Federation getting off its knees after the disastrous Klingon War.
Exactly.
But again, that's one of my criticisms of this season, that they lost the war so terribly. And we
But they didn't
basically,
lose it.
they did. Do you not remember the we came back 9 months too late, and now the Klingon icons and the lines have shown that like the Federation is all but conquered?
Oh, anyway, so speaking of season two, do you now consider that Discovery is in the Prime universe?
Like the timeline?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely not. It's a spin-off like the J.J. Abrams movies.
Okay, so you just think J.J. Abrams plus this are doing their own thing. So interesting, do you like the J.J. Abrams reboot, given that it's also quite different?
I've only seen the first and third films. I thought the first film was okay, or fun. It was fun. And then I heard way too much negative about the second that I didn't bother with it. And then I watched the third and it was okay too. I'd actually probably worse than the first, but
Okay. Yeah, so you're basically not, you're basically resistant to non-PU stuff or non-respectful stuff, and that is going to be problematic. I get that.
I don't know if I'd put it that way, because I don't want to sound like some sort of like Star Trek Luddite or something that says like you can't bring changes to my franchise, because I don't feel that way. I just honestly don't understand why. Actually, no, I have some theories, but I don't understand why they couldn't do what DS9 and the Next Generation and Voyager did, which is okay, it's 20 years after the events of the last show that's been on TV, because it's been 20 years since the last show was on TV. So if we want to bring back the old cast, we can, but we don't have to. And we can show some interesting drama folding out of the places that those series ended. Like it feels.
So you're kind of like, why bother going back to the beginning? You could have just been respectful and started at the end and carried on.
Exactly. Why go back and just play with the same ideas if you're just not trying to mine nostalgia for like Hollows? Like, oh, there's the Enterprise. That's so exciting. It's like, well, we could go forward in time too and keep all the same like fundamental building blocks and create something new. I should mention at this point that if I've been on, I don't know the last time I was on a review of something more modern, but I have a lot of cynicism when it comes to reboots and you know, re-sequels and all that other stuff.
You don't say.
Sorry, Bina. of like callously just mining nostalgia and creating hollow imitations.
I actually think it's something slightly, I mean, I don't deny that there's that going on, especially with the Star Wars films. But I think the reason to go back to the very beginning or pre-beginning is probably to help out people like me or much younger people than me to get into it. Because I think if I were watching, if I was told Star Trek is coming back and it's going to take place 20 years after whatever was the last one, I'd be like, well, you know, I didn't watch DS9 or Enterprise or any of the or Next Generation, so I'm just not going to jump into that. Whereas because it's going back to the beginning, I feel like, okay, like this is an entry point for me now. So I think it's a way of getting a new generation of fans, which is both commercial, but makes a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah, that's one. I think that's one.
Like,
way
I don't
to
have
do
to
it,
invest but in watching, you know, 10 other million sort of episodes before I jump into this.
I don't know, because there's tons of things in Discovery that are kind of hinting at the broader world. Discovery's not heavy on details, but
You can watch it and enjoy it without that. So I can enjoy the Harry Mudd character, even though I don't know his backstory, but can see people I know watching it enjoy the fact that there is some continuity there.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with the Harry Mudd stuff. Was kind of fun. But I also just like Rainbow.
You liked some. Is that where the one star comes from? What are your positives? Where do your one or two stars, what do they relate to?
I think the show was visually quite grand. It's nice to see like a significant budget science fiction show on television. I liked the more substantial peek into the creepy imperial fascism of the Terran Empire. Like, I liked the idea of the Discovery having to be undercover in that universe for a period of time. I think Tilly is a ton of fun. In some ways, I think she's a little bit of a Star Trek fan in a Star Trek TV show.
Oh, 100%. And that's why she's so lovable.
I think there's a lot to like about Tilly in her kind of like naive, open-spirited enjoyment of what's around her. It kind of harkens back to like certain hopeful, joyful elements of Star Trek, especially because the show can be a little dour. I like Lorca.
Yay.
Before his turn. I liked his means, whatever, you know, the ends justify the means approach to a certain extent. And I like Saru. Other than that, though,
I really want Saru to be captain in season two, like proper captain, not acting.
Yeah.
Will you watch season two?
I think I'm curious enough to see what they'll do with it. My diehard Trekkie fan, I think he's out, but I will be his correspondent and let him know how things are going in this alternate timeline. Yeah, I'll see what they do, but that's kind of because like I love Star Trek, and I hope they kind of after their big flashy season get into some of the more nitty-gritty stuff that I was talking about previously.
And I think they will. I mean, I think you have to, I always think that the first season of anything is often a little bit weak because they have to jam in so much character development. You know, they have to just introduce everybody and introduce the world, and, you know, and they also gave themselves a super complicated twisty plot. And, you know, it's only really in season two that you know something's going to settle down and establish, and maybe even season three. So I hope you give it another go, but
yeah,
you sounded very angry though. So maybe you shouldn't.
I don't think I'm angry. I think I'm.
Dude, that tweet after the finale, you were like, "That's like the worst finale ever. It's totally unsatisfying on every level possible and imaginable." It was pretty angry.
Okay, first, I don't think that's a direct quote.
No, I paraphrase.
You paraphrase. You loosely paraphrase. But no, I think that art ending was absolutely
I'm finding
garbage.
It now.
Okay. I haven't been tweeting much lately, so it shouldn't be too hard. But no, I think the ending is absolute trash fire, terrible. The way there's just such a hard reset on so many things. I just think it's crazy. Laurel being like dictator because I have an atom bomb or whatever strapped to the heart of the planet is kind of insane. The running into the Enterprise just felt like a cheesy end of a season, and yeah, I just no thanks. But you know, everyone getting medals was nice. Even all those characters that are supposed to be important that I have no idea who they are or why they matter.
I was very emotional. Okay.
I was too, but apparently filled with rage.
Stephen Lee. Sorry, I'll cut that out. That's your actual name.
Do the Twitter name, I guess.
Okay. Star Trek Discovery Season 1 is so weak. The conclusion for Season 1 is trash. What a disappointment. I mean, trash is quite a strong word.
No, I stand by that. I'm fine with that.
You're fine with that.
Uh-huh. It was weak, in my opinion. It was trash at the end, in my opinion.
I'm trying to find out if you've got any other Trek tweets in here before I let you go.
I don't know. I didn't tweet about it much, I don't think.
Well, you must have tweeted about it before then because I already knew you hated it, and that's how.
You had a post on Facebook, and I think you said something like, oh, this is great. And like, nope. I respectfully disagree.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. That might be it.
And I was on board with you when you watched the first few episodes, and you're like, I don't know about this. And I said, try the Orville. I actually found it more satisfying.
I'm really enjoying the Orville, too.
Yeah. I mean,
the Orville is more what I thought Trek would be about, which is kind of like shiny ships and everything works out in the end and everyone learns a positive lesson, except they have dick jokes now.
If I had to be honest, what I was expecting from Star Trek Discovery, or hoping for, I mean, I could go into like my fantasy of what they would have done, but what I was hoping for was probably a darker and grittier view of the universe and humanity, but still fundamentally honing to like developing characters and their dynamics between each other, but also exploring moral, ethical, science fiction ideas, weaving it into a bigger plot. That's what I was hoping for, and I don't think they did.
Mm.
So instead, I'll just write like Star Trek fan fiction or something.
And actually, I mean, hasn't McFarlane said that season two of The Orville, because it actually has proven to be very popular with kind of more straight Trek fans, that he's going to actually cut out all the jokiness and make it a bit more Trekky next year or next season?
I think that would make it a pretty compelling show.
Because I think it's well acted, you know, and I really do like some of the characters, so.
I think they've done some really interesting ideas in that show. Mm. I think you kind of have to, if you're a person like me, you kind of have to get through the pilot in the second episode. Because I don't think those don't really show what the series can do. And then I think it's the third or fourth episode where Borgus, like they basically explore gender identity and things like that. This is a more... And at the same time, I'm watching Discovery, and I'm like, this is more Star Trek and more what I want out of my science fiction than anything Discovery has done in several episodes.
Yeah, and I've had multiple people say that to me.
Yeah. And then they followed it up in a really interesting way with that, like, world ship episode. I'm like, that's, like, a classic idea from science fiction, but, you know, people not realizing they're in a ship and, you know, the kind of dogma about it. Even though an outsider comes and reveals the truth. Like, that's great. That was all great stuff. And I like a lot of the characters.
And it has that kind of, because I think a lot of the people who worked on actual Trek work on this, so the music sounds very authentic. And, you know, a lot about it is kind of, yeah. Anyway, I'm enjoying it. And as someone who'd never really watched Trek before, the fact that I've been enjoying both Discovery and The Orville is a great delight to my boyfriend. He's a big Trek fan. So.
I'm not saying so one thing I might say about Discovery is that I think it has flaws that stand out even if the show was just called Discovery and you drop the Star Trek.
Oh, I found another one. 25th of September 2017. Watching Star Trek Discovery just makes me want to play at Stellaris game.
That's true. Stellaris is a 4X strategy game set in space. You manage your own space empire.
Very cool. What do you play?
So I was just enjoying the visuals, and I think like I'd rather be playing my video game than watching this television show. It's a PC game.
I feel bad for you because like the very next tweet is your disappointment at season 7 of Game of Thrones. I just feel, oh, poor. This is what Stephen does. He sits at home and he watches TV. He doesn't really like.
That's not true. Lately, I've been watching Altered Carbon, which, if you're a science fiction fan but of a different kind, I think is pretty damn fantastic.
I found it very hard to get into that. The first episode, just this sheer amount of tits and ass on show and violence. I was just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I can get that part. The violence is really extreme.
And I thought
show.
I was going to binge it. Like, I had the day for it. I was like, I'm going to watch this all. And I was like, no.
But part of the message of the show is that human identity has been divorced from our bodies.
Mm.
So human bodies are essentially like clothes. So there's like a casual disregard for the human form that doesn't exist in, or does exist in our world, but not to the same extreme.
And the good news about that is we can show lots of pretty women getting beaten up.
Lots of pretty men get beaten up too.
Yeah, I know. Cool. Well, have a lovely rest of the day, and I hope to chat soon. I'll keep annoyingly tweeting you whenever I'm taping an episode and see if I can lure you on.
I appreciate it, and I'm proud. I hope I have given you some fodder for if it's just the Star Trek Appreciation Society when you record this, because
I hope so, because I think it is. You know, it's important to get a mix of views, and even though I enjoyed it, like I said, that there were things that I found annoying, so hopefully we'll get more of a balanced show. We'll see. Cool.
Best of it. Yeah. I look forward to listening to it.
Excellent. Speak to you soon, Stephen.
Bye, Bina.
Bye.